Hello, welcome to the Policy Digest podcast. This is a special Scottish edition in light of the upcoming parliamentary elections and the launch of the Council's Scottish Parliamentary Election Manifesto. I'm Fleur Nielsen, I'm Head of Policy. I'm joined by Josh Niederost, who's our Public Affairs Lead, and Robin Cook, who's our Lead Member of Staff for COD Scotland. We're just going to have a bit of a discussion about our policy in Scotland and our public affairs work there. Firstly, for context for those members who aren't familiar with the political landscape in Scotland, Josh, I wondered if you could tell us a bit about what's happening in Scottish politics.
Hi, Fleur. So, yes, there are parliamentary elections happening on the 6th of May in Scotland. These are for the Scottish Parliament. And there, some 129 members are elected. And we're going to see if the SNP, the Scottish National Party, will retain power and continue to be the governing party. Now, the SNP has been in government there since 2007. Nicola Sturgeon has been the First Minister since 2014. And obviously, health and education policy are devolved in Scotland. So these elections really matter for our members in Scotland.
I don't think I can remember a time where Scottish politics has had so much coverage. But do you have any thoughts on what the outcome of the election could be?
Yeah, so current opinion polls are showing that the SNP will continue to be the governing party after the elections. It would be really interesting to see if they are able to win an overall majority. But actually, the proportional representation system in place in the Scottish Parliament makes this relatively hard. My personal prediction, dare I say this, is that the SNP will hold its position and stay in power. And this is obviously despite the questions over Nicola Sturgeon's leadership in relation to what she knew and when about the Alex Salmond affair. Both the Scottish Conservatives and the Scottish Labour parties have recently appointed new leaders, Douglas Ross and Anna Sawa, respectively, and it will be fascinating to see if they have any impact on this election. However, Nicola Sturgeon is clearly the dominant political figure in Scottish politics. She's been able to successfully harness those who voted for independence in 2014 at Westminster elections and has widely been seen to have handled the pandemic well in comparison to other leaders such as Boris Johnson. Now, there are over 30 MSPs who have announced their retirement, including the current Cabinet Secretary for Health and Sport, Jean Freeman. So we're going to see a lot of change, and it'd be really interesting to see who is appointed the next Cabinet Secretary for Health.
Yeah, I agree, Josh. It will be really interesting to watch how this election plays out, especially with the impact of COVID bringing health policy and also economic concerns to the fore. And also, obviously, all the renewed conversations about Scottish independence and reactions to Brexit.
What will we see in the next few months in Scotland in terms of election activity?
The pre-election period, or PERDA, started on the 25th of March. And so the Scottish Civil Service and parliamentary staff are limited in the actions that they can take at this time. Obviously, the political parties have started their campaigning, and a lot of different organisations will be publishing election manifestos with their key asks for the next Scottish government. Campaigning will certainly be different in the context of the pandemic.
Robin, you lead all our work in Scotland from a staff point of view, and you've been working on the council's election manifesto for this election.
Yep, we've been working for the last couple of months now drafting the manifesto. So the Council of Deans of Health Scotland, who represent the 12 universities who are our members in Scotland providing healthcare education, we're publishing their manifesto this week. You can read the full manifesto on our website, but just to give an overview of our five key asks for the next Scottish government, they are to sustain funding for our disciplines and invest in technology, to provide strategic funding for CPD, at continuing professional development, also to invest in teaching and research opportunities for healthcare staff to build up the academic healthcare workforce, to involve universities in workforce planning at all levels, and to increase funding for healthcare research and international partnerships.
Yes, and you know, as Robin says, our members in Scotland would like to see the next Scottish government continuing to work closely with the healthcare higher education sector, particularly on workforce policy, so that Scotland can successfully come out of the pandemic and continue to educate the future healthcare workforce that it needs. The pandemic has shown how central our members and their work is to the well-being and future success of Scotland.
And I think a good example of an important area of engagement for our members in Scotland are the commissioned intake numbers. So in Scotland, pre-registration nursing, midwifery and paramedic education is commissioned. For this next academic year, 21-22, there will be a 5.8% overall increase in nursing and midwifery places, with individual universities having specific allocations for those. It's really key for universities in Scotland to be involved in the intake decision-making process and to be equal partners in this and the development of workforce strategy. Having this collaboration with Scottish Government on workforce planning ensures that the universities have adequate lead-in times for programme development to ensure capacity building and the correct skill mixes. So it's really a really important area for our members to be part of.
Yeah, and we've discussed, haven't we, for a few years, the need to invest in institutions if you are increasing student numbers, to invest in infrastructure. And I know you mentioned it, but England, both England and Scotland, have just secured new funding to support simulation and practice placements. But in fact, the Scottish sums involved are proportionately greater than in England. Do you want to say something about that, Robin?
Yeah, so recently on the 23rd of March, Scottish Government announced that universities in Scotland who provide healthcare education would receive £3.8 million to support placements that use innovative technology, so for sort of simulated or alternative placements. On top of that, the Scottish Government has also given £4.9 million for an increase in the number of staff who supervise students on placements. So that's quite a significant amount of money, which will hopefully really help our members in Scotland. And we obviously really welcome this funding and it's greatly appreciated. But I think what we'd like the next government to consider is their longer term plan for this. At the council, we've been talking a lot about the increasing use of technology and simulation in healthcare in general and in healthcare education. And so it's really important that the government sort of thinks about this longer term. Healthcare faculties need that sustained investment for infrastructure and equipment to ensure that they produce the healthcare workforce needed to deliver future services.
And I suppose what I'd want to add, Robin, is that the money hasn't just come out of nowhere. We have lobbied really hard for this. And I think particularly in the last few months since COVID and towards the end of the summer, we've been drawing attention to the massive problems that Scotland's had with placement capacity, particularly for AHPs.
Yeah, definitely. I think COVID had a really significant impact on placement capacity in Scotland. Unfortunately, a lot of AHP placements were pulled. So this funding is testament to the sort of the sector's voice in Scotland. They've really worked hard to try and get additional support. So hopefully this will ease some of those pressures.
And Josh, the timing of this announcement has got real relevance to your regulation work too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this announcement is particularly welcome considering the Nursing and Midwifery Council's recent announcement of new recovery standards on the use of simulation in practice hours. These new recovery standards allow alternative learning opportunities, use simulation, virtual and digital learning, and other contemporary approaches to be used up to a maximum of 300 hours. However, where institutions have already included simulated practice learning in keeping with the standards and in keeping with the EU directive, as per their approval, the recovery standard using those alternative simulated practice hours can actually be an addition. So this 300 hours can be an addition.
Yeah, that's been a message, Josh, that's taken a while to filter through to everybody, I think. But it's very important, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it sort of has taken a while to percolate down through the membership and across the UK. I think one thing to say that it's really important to say that these hours must be in accordance with the standards of student supervision and assessment in 2018 as well.
Any final thoughts on our manifesto and work in Scotland post-election, Robin?
I think just to say that the council and our members in Scotland hope to work with the next Scottish government, whoever they might be, on progressing all of our manifesto asks. We really hope to continue to engage and work with them as closely as we do now, particularly with key individuals and stakeholders post-election, including whoever the new CABSEC may be. There's a new chief nurse in Scotland, the chief allied health professions officer, NERS, and also there's a new director of RCN Scotland. So we hope to work with all of them more closely post-election.
And that's it for this Policy Digest edition. Thank you, Robin. Thanks, Josh. We hope it's given members an overview of what's happening in Scotland. I think particularly our members who aren't in Scotland and see much less of this. Hopefully we've given some overview of our key manifesto messages too. We'll be back next week with a Welsh edition. Please do support and retweet both our manifestos to promote the voice of health higher education sector across the UK.